This podcast is brought to you by Voice of Vets. Voice of Vets. Hear it. Feel 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 it.
Joining us at this time to unpack this further is Mr. McThomas Ntuli, someone who has the distinction of not only living over the course of this pandemic, but doing so while suffering from diabetes. Mr. Ntuli, thank you so much for joining us here on the COVID Report. Could you please start by taking us through, telling us about your condition and how you've been managing to live with it during this pandemic?
Well, can I please start by saying that thank you for having me, Game, on this platform. And yeah, well, with diabetes, there are two types of diabetes. I will start there. And then there's type 1 and type 2. And then for me, I've been living with type 1 for quite some time now. It's been a couple of years. And then now with this year being a pandemic year whereby we've got this thing that we all know of, coronavirus. It's been quite a challenging one, I'll say, as a person that is living with diabetes, in a sense that you are forever wary of the environment that you are in, because like with the things that are out there, what we know at least from corona is that it's also airborne, so you will never know when you may contract it and so forth. So you always try to keep yourself protected. I know with myself, with the lockdown having been implemented in South Africa, I was one of the people that were very disciplined within that space, whereby I had to make sure that, I try to avoid unnecessary movement. I'll only leave my house whenever there's a need to and so forth. And then whenever I come back home, I made sure, I remember the first time I had to go out actually to the clinic actually for a checkup or to get my medication. In coming back, it was one of those situations that even with the clothes that you're wearing at that point, you feel uncomfortable that you put them in the laundry, make sure that they're washed, and then before you can put them on again and then change into something else rather than continuing roaming around the house with the same clothes that you were with or that you had on while you were outside. So it's been quite a challenging one, especially with me being a person that's always been in the space, moving from one point to another. And right now, having to confine myself within a very limited spaces, for example, say my house, and then trying to limit my movements as much as possible. And then making sure that I abide to all the conditions and the restrictions that have been implemented by the government in trying to have us protected as a nation. So when you're living with diabetes, in my part, it's been a thing that since I'm one of the most vulnerable people out there when it comes to this corona pandemic, I had to make sure that I follow each and everything to avoid being in a situation where I end up contracting the virus.
Indeed. And you just alluded to it now, and it serves as a great segue to my next question. In this climate of restricted movement, obeying regulations impeding essential movement in many instances, and also everything we've covered here on the COVID Report about how stretched medical personnel and medical resources were, especially during the early parts of the lockdown. Did this in any way affect your ability to access your medication or access the clinic for your regular checkups? And how has that process played out over the course of the pandemic?
Well, for me, I don't have a medical aid first. So where I'd get my medication or where I'd attend for checkups with diabetes, I'd go to a public hospital. And then with that, ever since the lockdown has been implemented, one of the things that the hospital I attend to did was, for example, trying to avoid that we visit the clinic or the hospital on a regular by giving us a medication that will last us for a while. Let's say being 2 months, being 3 months, depending, on how much stock they also have on their end, because they wouldn't want to supply us, let's say, for a year and then them ending up not having stock at the end of the day for the next patients that may come in. So that's one of the things that they did. And then, so that, like I've just mentioned, to avoid us visiting the hospital on a regular. And then in terms of visiting the or going for checkup with the doctor as such, that has been the same. It's like the doctors have also been limited with the clinic that I visit or the hospital that I visit. And then what happened is that I would go for, ever since the lockdown, actually, I want to say that I have only went once whereby I had to see a doctor, whereas with the other times that I've went there, it's just merely being a situation where I just come in, collect my medication, and then leave the premises, of which I would say that I understand them implementing a situation of us not visiting the hospital on a regular, because with the pandemic having been on the rise at that time and still on the rise even within this time, is that in a situation like, or environment like hospital, for someone like myself, it's a very uncomfortable one, whereby, yeah, you forever are cautious, end up just simply contracting the virus due to whatever things that may be going on there. But then that is just me maybe being a little bit anxious and paranoid. But then, yeah, that's been the situation with me trying to visit the hospitals.
So now, Matt Thomas, being that you yourself are still young, still in your 30s as a young South African man, and those older are the ones who are the most at risk of developing severe complications with the coronavirus, how has this made you feel about managing your diabetes amidst the fears of contracting COVID-19? And how would you measure your fear versus that of someone older than you who might also be experiencing or living with type 1 diabetes like yourself, or type 2 diabetes and the anxieties that I'm sure come with that as well? I'm curious about the juxtaposition, being that you are much younger than some of the other people that are much more at risk.
I don't know about me being young places me less in a space where I'm not at risk than a person who's older, but then what I know is that with myself, for example, I've tried to sort of like do take some of the things that I have been advised or been told, such as like certain concoctions that may help with your immune systems and all of that, so that I try to help myself healthy at all times. And then even with the diet and everything else that I usually have to be cognizant of, despite being in the pandemic era, is that I've just been keeping up with that so that I make sure that my health is on point, and then trying to avoid any unnecessary complications that I may face if I were, for example, to contract the virus. So that's what I have been doing in my case to try and make sure that I stay healthy at all times.
Now that we're on lockdown level 1, and most people are using the opportunity given by us being at lockdown level 1 to go out and attend events, go out and have fun, go out and do things that they weren't necessarily able to do in the heights of the lockdown here in the country, and how all of this degree of freedom that has been afforded to us has stoked the flames of fears of the second wave. What would you say is most concerning for you as far as our chances of a second wave coming in South Africa? Our level of readiness as far as the medical systems in place to help take in patients and help treat those who get sick. What would you say is the most concerning thing for you in this period of time right now?
Okay. What I can say is that in my view, first of all, with the pandemic having to have hit us, South Africa was one of those countries, I'll say, that were never ready for this because of how our medical industry has been set up prior to the pandemic. So we were never ready for such a situation whereby if like we had, if the hospitals and the clinics and everything else that is concerning the medical practice was to be hit by such a situation. Right now, the thing is that what's happening with being in on level one, people are sort of like are living their best life in a sense that they're sort of like are no longer paying attention to all the necessary precautions that they need to pay attention to in order for them to avoid contracting the virus still, you know. So we're living in a space or in a way whereby we act as though the virus no longer exists. So that's one of my major fears right now, especially now with the talks of the second wave of the virus actually being on the way. So I feel like with situation whereby we have events that can accommodate quite a significant number of people, those type of events, for me, at least from what I've seen, is that they never really pay attention to all the regulations and all the precautious measures that need to be in place in order to have the people that are in the space to be safe. So I feel like soon we will be in a space whereby with the second wave, a lot of people, especially young people, would have suffered from this or would have contracted this because of situations such as going to events and all of that.
So finally from me, Mac Thomas, in light of everything we've just covered about the looming threat of the second wave, as a two-handed question to conclude our discussion, part one of my question, do you believe this has prompted you to take more precaution against COVID-19, being that you live with the condition that you live with, than perhaps the next person and the amount of precaution they have had to take care of themselves against this virus? And do you think this sets us up for a post-coronavirus world? Do you think we will get there? And what do you think it's going to take from everyone putting in the effort to fight this virus for us to get to that point where COVID-19 is a thing of the past?
Thank you very much for your question, Gabe. In my opinion, yes, we will get to a space whereby, or to a period whereby corona is a thing of the past. And then I base my reason based on history, because like this is not the first pandemic to ever hit the world. There have been other pandemics before, but then this one is just happens that it affected the world to a larger scale than the others, I'll say. And no other pandemic has ever hit the world like this one has. Or if there are others, they're quite few and limited. But then at the end of it is that we will get to a point whereby we're living in a post-COVID-19 period in life. And in order for everybody or for the world to get there, I think that it will be a challenging one, first of all. It's going to be a challenging one before we can even get there, because like, the reality of it is that with individuals out there in the world, not all of us understand or see this from the same point of view, from the same light, you know. For me, for example, as a person that is living with diabetes, I may be cautious in everything when it comes to COVID-19. I may be mindful of sanitizing my hands every once in a while, of making sure that I have my mask on in order for me to limit the spread of the virus. But then that may not necessarily be the case with the next person, you know. So with that being the situation of being a thing, it sort of like places us in a difficult space as the world, whereby we can be in a space whereby we're living post-COVID-19. So it makes the whole pandemic to stretch longer than it's supposed to be, in a way whereby if the pandemic was supposed to be a thing that can only be for a year or 2 years, now we are in, will be in the space whereby it stretches for longer than that, depending. So in order for everybody to, in order for the world to live past this, I think it's only based on individuals to take all the precautions when it comes to COVID-19 in order for them to be mindful of all the things that they need to do that are necessary in order for us to eventually be in a space whereby we no longer are affected by the virus. And then it also needs the superpowers of the other countries. It also needs the support of the other countries that have got the resources, actually. That's what I want to say. And that can help us fight the spread of the of COVID-19, either being financial resources or whatever the case may be, in order, for example, to support the medical industry to get whatever it is that we need that can limit the spread of the virus, such as a vaccine or something like that. So I think we all need to speak from one voice as the world in order for us to have the spread of the COVID-19 phasing out. But then at this point, I think everybody is much aware that not everybody in the world, being people in higher places, being the ordinary person on the streets, not everybody is speaking from the same voice when it comes to this. Not everybody understands COVID-19 from the same perspective and all of that. So I think because of such, it will take us a little bit of a while for us to get to a period whereby we're living post COVID-19. But then for us to get there, it's something that is eventual. It will eventually happen. So we will get to that point. But then as for now, that point may still be a mile away.
Cautious optimism from our guest here on the COVID Report at this time, Mr. McThomas Ntuli. And he's just joined us here on the show to talk us through his experiences of living with type 1 diabetes during COVID-19 pandemic and the ways in which these circumstances have prompted him to take extra precaution to protect himself from possibly contracting the virus. McThomas, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for the insight into your day-to-day experience. We will switch the gears and talk about those living with tuberculosis. The COVID-19 response is largely built on existing infrastructure, a wealth of scientific and medical expertise, and community mobilization to control the dual HIV and tuberculosis epidemics. Joining us on the COVID Report at this time is the wellness coordinator for SANTA, Mr. Sian Maporoma, to unpack for us the work that they do with SANTA. Mr. Maporoma, thank you so much for joining us here on the COVID Report. Could you please start by telling us what SANTA is all about and what type of programs you offer?
SANTA is a TB organization. It obviously tap into HIV, and with this new pandemic, also tapping into COVID-19 and looking at how best we can manage these cases.
Very straightforward stuff. Can you take me through the sort of support and services that you offer vulnerable groups in South Africa? And more importantly, what sort of new sort of services you found yourself having to provide over the course of this pandemic in particular?
What we do is we take care of people who are infected with TB. We also take care of people who are affected by TB in case of making sure that they've got nutrition at all times. They take their medication at all times. What we had to do during this pandemic is that we were distributing food parcels in the KwaZulu-Natal province. And we have been active in the province of Gauteng, making sure that everyone that is infected with HIV, infected with TB, are given medication and are in these trying times.
And can you also please take me through how your role at SANTA has changed during this time of the COVID-19 lockdown and the pandemic, if it's changed at all?
But we had to tap into making sure that our infected client are getting nutrition. We had to make sure that we support them. Remember that some of our clients depend entirely on their wealth, on their health, making sure that they go out, get some food, or maybe they run a spaza shop or some sort of those things. But during these times, they were unable to do that. And at some point, they had to take medication on an empty stomach. So in that case, we had to tap in and make sure that we mobilize nutrition for all those infected and affected by TB. And we did that well, and making sure that those who are not who did not get results were liaised with, and making sure that they get their result on time, and making sure that they are referred to the hospitals and the clinics that are around them.
Insightful stuff. Now, much of the chatter at the very beginning of this period of lockdown, these tricky, unprecedented, uncertain times, a lot of the chatter at the very beginning of this centered around South Africa needing to undergo a lockdown to make sure that we've got emergency medical services on the ready for people who unfortunately contract the virus or are infected by the virus and need medical attention. Do you think the COVID-19 pandemic has piled on pressure on a health system that is already dealing with tuberculosis and HIV/AIDS?
That is true. The situation in South Africa had to change. The scenario of health system, the scenario of taking care of patients had to change completely. Like, for instance, people needed to be encouraged to go to the clinics, which at that time, no mobility was available. And with the resources that are given in the clinics, I've been in few clinics and it has been a challenge in making sure. Remember, we have chronic patients that depend on medication for daily survival. Even if it's not TB, it could be diabetes, it could be other things, but they depend entirely on treatment. In those cases, I think, in my opinion, our government was so much under pressure. Our government was dealing with stress, and our government was in serious need.
Indeed, they were. I'm curious, though, and especially from your perspective, have these shifts and this difficulty that we've just referred to, that our health system providers had and the assistance they needed to weather the COVID-19 storm, do you think the urgency of the need to address COVID-19, the urgency to address infected patients who show up to clinics and show up to hospitals needing medical assistance, do you think all of this has resulted in an inadvertent deprioritization of TB? Has TB flown under the radar, so to speak, just because of how immediate and how urgent COVID-19 is at the top of the agenda, not just here in South Africa, but everywhere else across the world? And has this delayed diagnosis of TB and treatment of TB for other patients, TB patients in particular, who need medical assistance?
It has been quite problematic. I've got three areas where TB was affected. It was in testing, where people were not actually tested at that time when COVID was still high. People were not tested. I think the state went down to 48% in new cases. So which means that there were people in the communities that were not tested. There were people in the communities that were sick and still spreading the TB germ. And then in terms of treatment, yes, there are areas in Gauteng, there are areas in other provinces where, because of the restriction of movement, people were unable to go and get their treatment. And the other cases will be in other clinics, there were shortages of medication. Even if the department tried to give them alternative drugs, but you remember that every drug has got its own, side effects. So people had to go and deal with new side effects. But all in all, I think our government did their best. Our government responded on time. And I think, let me just say, our communities did their best as well. Even if at some point we were losing it, at some point our government had their flaws. But at the end of the day, we managed TB, we managed COVID-19, and I think we, at the end of the day, we will emerge winners.
Indeed, we will. Now, the case definition of COVID-19 has evolved and broadened since the onset of the pandemic. I remember the chatter around COVID-19 not be transmitted in airborne patterns. And this may overlap considerably with pulmonary TB symptoms. How does it make it more challenging for healthcare workers to be able to split the difference between patients who come in with COVID-19 symptoms and patients who come in with TB symptoms in the interests of making sure that these two issues don't overlap when resources are still a topic of concern and a topic of constraint among the health workers that are helping us fight this pandemic?
TB is more, it was treated at this time, it was treated like a secondary factor. So when you present with these symptoms like coughing, losing weight and losing taste and all those things, you were taken to, you were tested for COVID. And then if you were found not to have COVID, that's when they test you for other diseases like TB and other pulmonary diseases.
So, Mr. Maporoma, the case definition of COVID-19 has evolved and broadened since the onset of the pandemic and may overlap considerably with pulmonary TB symptoms. I'm thinking of situations where TB patients come into the clinic and the hospital to seek medical assistance because of the symptoms that they're experiencing versus the same story for COVID-19 patients. How do healthcare workers go about navigating the challenge of distinguishing between the two in resource-constrained settings like these? How do they go about treating the TB patients and the COVID-19 patients in a way that one isn't compromised by the other due to the lack of resources?
Looking at these two diseases, their symptoms are almost the same. So what happens is that we remember at the beginning of this pandemic, our president advised that if you present with these symptoms, you should bypass the clinic and go straight into hospital where you'll be tested for COVID-19. In that case, people were tested for COVID-19, and then if they were found to be COVID-19 free, that's when they'll be transferred to a normal primary health care where they'll be tested for TB.
Very insightful stuff. Thank you very much for that. Now, as far as the stigmas that are attached, well, that were attached, certainly at the very beginning bits of the lockdown, the stigmas that were attached to COVID-19 and the ways in which this stigma could possibly extend to TB patients. The rapid spread of COVID-19 has triggered a social stigma and discrimination towards people believed to have been in contact with the virus. So because the symptoms of COVID-19 and TB bear so many similarities, how have we gone about stopping the stigma being extended to TB patients?
I am not sure if at the moment we should call it a stigma. Because at the moment, when someone around you is infected with or is presenting with these signs, we obviously think of COVID-19. And our the advice that we got from our medical practitioners is that if you're infected with COVID-19, you should isolate, you should all do all those, you should quarantine, and you should be far from your immediate contact or far from the household. So I'm not sure if we should call it a stigma, but with TB, yes, TB has been, I mean, people who were infected with TB has been struggling with stigma. They've been isolated and some of them were neglected. Remember, some of them are very sick. So families will refuse to assist them in those. We had those cases that are similar to that. But at this stage, let's not yet call it a stigma. Maybe let's call it an isolation. And until we know exactly how to deal with this pandemic, we can now try to, come in hands with it and be around those people who are infected. Maybe the cure that is coming will contain the germ until people are cured.
In terms of the potential for a lack of awareness around this virus, a lack of awareness around this pandemic to possibly fuel discrimination and disrupt social unity, cause isolation, as you have just alluded to, could this then potentially hinder effective public health interventions? And is it therefore important to establish reliable health services and strategies that prioritize care for both COVID-19 and TB patients?
Yes, I think, remember all these diseases, they came like how COVID-19 joined them all. But it has been a wake-up call for individuals, for the government, and for everybody else that, you know, we really are in a serious need of, a well-formed health system. So in my answer in short is that, yes, we need to look into health. We need to, our government need to do more and make sure that our health system is at par and our health system can also accommodate COVID-19 as a new disease. and also not neglecting all those other diseases that were there, like TB, HIV, and sugar diabetes.
Great segue into my final question for you, Mr. Maporoma. How can South Africa, in your opinion, use this opportunity to transform the TB and HIV AIDS response here in South Africa, due in part to the ways in which this pandemic has revealed to us the very important areas of our health system that we need to improve on, the things of our systems we need to change? How can we use this opportunity to transform our response as a country to TB and HIV AIDS?
There are areas, yes, that we need to keep up a bit, like in terms of awareness, in terms of making sure that our testing accommodates COVID-19 and maybe a rapid response in terms of COVID-19, and making sure that everyone is informed of all these three diseases and how they can manage that and where they need to go if they find to be dealing with signs and symptoms of these three diseases.
We've just been joined by Mr. Sian Maporoma, Wellness Coordinator for the South African National Tuberculosis Association, to talk us through the experience of those living with tuberculosis and how they've had to take extra precaution to protect themselves this pandemic. We were also joined by Mr. McThomas, who has the distinction of living with type 1 diabetes, and he talked us through the experience of living with diabetes during this pandemic.
This podcast was brought to you by Voice of Vets. By Voice of Vets. To hear more of our shows, tune in to 88.1 or streams by www.vafm.co.za.